listening to the Swim Out Podcast, a show about the wonderful world of outdoor swimming.
Hello, and welcome to this very special edition of Swim Out. I'm beyond excited to be on my way to meet Chloe McArdle and have a day out with the Queen of the Channel. Chloe has swum the English Channel 44 times, more than any other person. She also holds the record for the longest uninterrupted, unassisted ocean swim, which she did in 2014 in the Bahamas.
This train is now approaching its final stop. This is Weymouth. If you see something that
I'm really looking forward to a day out in Dorset, where my grandparents lived, and maybe grabbing a little sneaky sea swim, as well as finding out more about Chloe and her phenomenal swimming career. So, hello Chloe.
Hello Vicky.
So good to be here in Dorset with you. Thank you for taking the time today to tell us about your swimming. Get the Swim Out listeners excited about all the swims they could do. We're sitting on your boat. What's your boat called?
Channel Queen.
Yay! And it's sort of slightly rainy day. But it's still very nice to be down at the coast. So you learned to swim when you were 11.
Mm.
How come so late?
Australia, that's exactly. Really late. Well, I was in grade 6, so I was 11, and the school organised for my class to go to a public swim pool and have school-based swim lessons. And then when they lined us up on the seats, the swim teachers there on that day, they said, who's never learned to swim before? And then I put my hand up, and I was one of only 4 kids across 2 classes. And then they sent us over to the baby pool to start our learn to swim journey, so to speak. And I was so embarrassed because there was pictures of whales and dolphins and starfish. And I was, you know, nearly high school level. Like, it was not cool. I was so embarrassed. I went home that night and I said, Mum, can you put me in proper lessons outside school? And she's like, yeah, sure, no worries. We just forgot to enroll you in lessons. So I'm the youngest of 4 and, you know, we've got a big family and busy parents working full time. Sometimes things just get slipped by the wayside, but I made up for it in the end.
Yeah, you certainly did. How did you get into open water swimming?
So I did competitive swimming after I learned to swim in the pool. Loved it. Never did open water swimming as a teenager. And then when I was 19, I decided I wanted to be the best in the world at something. I was at university and I started triathlon. I thought maybe I could excel at triathlon. And I was okay, it was good, but it was nothing special. And that was where I was introduced to the open water element. And I loved it. Loved being free of the lines, the chlorine, the concrete, exploring nature. I mean, I swam fast, so I didn't do lots of exploring, but I just loved being in that natural environment. It was great.
And when did you know that it was going to become your life's passion?
Ah, well, I was all in for triathlon at that point, between 19 years of age and 21 years of age. Then I realised I wasn't progressing well. I was not going to be a good elite athlete of any notoriety, is that a word? So I thought, okay, I really want to be the best in the world at something, and sport's kind of my jam, so I ran a marathon and swam a marathon because the swimming and the run were my stronger points. The swimming was more of a stronger point. And the marathon run went really well. It was 3 hours 37. And then the swimming marathon was 11-kilometre swim, and that went even better. So I was first female, and there was only one male that was ahead of me. So I loved it, and I loved pushing myself. And with that years and years of competitive swimming, I was swimming, say, 50 kilometres a week in the last 2 years, and doing weights training and, you know, a lot of elite level at the junior level training as a teenager. So I had a big background. I had an advantage over the average person that got into marathon swimming as an adult.
And how did that lead you to the English Channel?
Well, I mean, besides the English Channel, I can't
think of anything else that comes remotely close to the prestige, the difficulty, and the historical place that the English Channel holds in marathon swimming, in the world of marathon swimming. It's like everything is compared to the English Channel. You know, is it colder than the English Channel? Is it warmer than the English Channel? Is it longer than the English Channel? So it is the benchmark swim of long distance open water swimming around the world. And it's interesting because a lot of English general people in public who may or may not be swimmers, they don't really necessarily understand the elevated profile of the English Channel because they spend most or all their lives in England, and they don't realise that outside England, it's this big thing. It's like a mecca. People travel to England just to swim the English Channel. So yeah, in Australia, it's a huge thing. Australians are the third highest nationality after English and Americans to swim the English Channel. So it's a big thing in Australia to be able to swim your beautiful waters from here to France.
It is beautiful water. I just want to touch on the fact that you're a domestic abuse survivor and you consequently suffer from PTSD. How do you think that affected your swimming? Or?
Well, swimming always, from when I got into, say, squad level training, was a really good outlet for me. It was a place that I could go that wasn't family time, it wasn't school time. It was my own little nook, my little safe space where I could just get any excess energy and my just forget about the world and just go and focus on that one repetitive motion where I could really push myself physically and emotionally. So it had always been an outlet for me, and more so when I was really struggling to cope with what I was going through when I was in that space. And I'm in a really good space now. I don't think I have any symptoms at all. And I haven't probably for about 12 months or so. But it really was a lifeline. If I hadn't have been into swimming or another sport, I don't know how I would have managed that. I did have some great people around me, but for me that wasn't enough. I needed that that physical and that maybe even as the spiritual part of swimming was something that really helped get me through some tough times. So I'm so grateful to the sport for that.
How would you say it's spiritual?
I think open water swimming is more than a sport because you're connected to something greater than yourself. You're in a mass of water where you can't control what's going on, and you've got to release yourself to whatever the conditions are on that day, and you need to come to the understanding that you're not the, unlike a human on land where you can control or manipulate all the things around you, you know, the external environment, once you're in the water as a swimmer, you're really at the mercy of the tides and the wind and the water temperature and the environment around you. So it's just, I think this is a lovely place where you can just let go, and beyond that kind of sense of letting go, just the connection to the wildlife, the sea life, I love. For me, it's a spiritual thing, so
yeah,
it's hard to define.
No, I really get that. You've talked about the channel being a place for rehab for you, and for me, it was definitely rehab for me because I lost a son, and you know, in my process of recovering from that, was when I started doing big swims. So, really understand that. I think it's the training as much as the actual swims, though, isn't it? It's the plodding around Dover Harbour for hours and hours on end.
We've both done a lot of that. I think a lot of your listeners know what it's like to do laps of Dover Harbour.
Yeah.
It's very rhythmic. It's you get into this kind of routine and... Yeah, I mean, there's so many things, and it is what it is for each person.
Yeah.
You have what you draw from it, I have what I draw from it.
Yeah.
I'm crying in my goggles before I was crossing the English Channel, just getting that stuff out. Much better out than in.
Yeah, and I just think that thing of physical activity is just really good at recovering.
It at least releases a lot of feel-good hormones, you know, adrenaline, oxytocin, especially if you're with other people. There's one more, endorphins, especially if you're going. I find speed work, I know you may not be the biggest fan of speed work, but I find that speed work, for me personally, releases more endorphins than steady state swimming.
So I like to get a bit of everything. How many feel good chemicals can I get? Cold water swimming, I get lots of adrenaline from cold water swimming. Yeah.
You've spoken out as well about, you know, women athletes not getting the same money and sponsorship and support. Mm-hmm. Women's football in the UK is doing really well. There seems to be some small changes happening.
Yes, it's so exciting when I see the updates about pay deals or maternity leave, things like that. I'm like, that's so awesome. UK women's football seems to be one of the leading women's sports in the world that is getting to the next level in those areas. And hopefully there'll be a trickle down into other sports.
Yeah. Do you see it at all in Australia?
It's quite interesting that I'm in a way removed from mainstream women's sport because I don't get any support from Australian sporting organisations. So I don't come under the Swimming Australia banner or the New South Wales banner as such. So I know that there's developments going on and we have a Women's Australian Football League now, which is fantastic. And I do kind of keep an eye on those things, but my personal lived experience, unfortunately, is having to operate outside support systems that are set up for athletes. So I literally need to meet or bring people onto my journey in a personal way to get support. So all those things I have no access to, maternity leave, sick leave, any sort of scholarship funding. I mean, I'm not actively marathon swimming now, but I mean, over more than a decade of swimming, you know, health treatments like physiotherapy, travel support, PR support, all that is just was never a factor in my career, which is really frustrating. But, you know, it is what it is, and I make the best with what I've got. And I have had some great support around me, and I would not have achieved what I've achieved if I didn't have support around me. It's not like I would ever claim I've done everything myself. But the whole process has been really frustrating. One day I write a book and it'll be quite detailed. One of the things right now that really upsets me is that the Queen of the English Channel bust, because the Queen of the English Channel is an official title. The Channel Swimming Association, who I've done 43 of my 44 channel swims with, they actually trademarked that title and they trademarked King of the English Channel title. And the Queen of the English Channel bust is of a man. And I brought this up with the committee many months before, possibly even 6 months before I was due to be awarded it, having achieved it by becoming the woman with the most number of crossings. And they took many months to respond fully, and they're like, we think it's appropriate that a man is the bust for the Queen of the English Channel title. And I'm like, well, it's a gendered award. Like, it is specifically to celebrate women's achievements. So of all awards, why wouldn't that be a bust of a woman? And wouldn't it be great for the first woman who swam the English Channel, Gertrude Ederle, to be that bust? Like, how hard is that?
Surely it should be.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I don't always see eye to eye with the Channel Swimming Association. But now I have a whole new playground in Dorset and around the Isle of Wight, and I'm loving it here. Yay. I don't have to deal with all that politics and rigmarole over there.
Let's go back now and just talk about your first English Channel crossing. How was that? Because it was quite a special one, wasn't it?
Well, I was aiming for a double crossing for my first crossing. I was training with swimmers who had swum the English Channel themselves back in Melbourne, where I used to live, when I was training up for this first big crossing. And they weren't the strongest, fittest, fastest swimmers. And I literally thought, if they can do one crossing, I reckon I can do two. And so I was training up for a double crossing, and I got to England, did the first crossing, 12 hours, 3 minutes. And I was not quite sure the crossing was, maybe how it should be going, but I'd never swum the English Channel before, so I didn't really have a reference point. Then I turned around, got out of the water, swam back, and the weather started closing in, and it all just didn't seem right. I was calling the captain out. I'm like, it seems like I'm going backwards. I don't understand what's going on. And he was like, oh, you're going to be out here hours if you're going to finish the double crossing. And I was like, oh, okay, whatever, I'll expect that. And it turned out later someone on my crew said that he'd just put the boat on autopilot from a previous double crossing relay, which is a different day, different tidal situation, different wind direction, different wave height.
So when I found that out later afterwards, I was like, yeah, I'm never going to use this pilot again. In fact, I'm never going to swim with this association again. So that was under the Channel Swimming and Piloting Federation. It was a horrible experience. And they actually lost me in the English Channel at one point, and I was screaming out, don't leave me behind. So it was really disappointing. It was a lot of money, and I paid for two crossings of the English Channel. And so I've seen great English Channel swims because I've coached 150 people to swim the English Channel. I've swum it 44 times. I've seen models of what may be the best out there. And then I've also seen some horrible situations in the English Channel. And I've had that range over a decade, over 100 people, as well as my own swim. So it's given me a really good foundation to know what I want and what I don't want from the swims that I organise.
When did you realise that you could be the queen of the channel?
It was never my original intention. I wanted to do the double crossing, and then I thought if that went okay, I would go after the triple crossing. But it was never, I'll just go and collect decades and decades worth of swims. Well, I was originally, after the double crossing, I successfully did that in the second year. I changed boat captain, changed to the CSA. I was attempting a triple crossing in the English Channel in my third year of channel swimming. I got 1.5 laps in, but not 3. Then I tried again the next year, got 2 and about a third laps in, but not 3. And so by the end of that, after about, I think it was 4 years of channel swimming, I'd amassed something like 13. And then I realised all I needed was 7 more to get the Australian record, because the Australian record was 19 at that time, by the great Des Renford, who is an absolutely colourful character who's inspired so many Australians over generations to swim the English Channel. When I decided to go after his record, which was 19, and I got to get to 20, I thought I can do 7 in a season. And then during that season, I thought, well, if I'm going for 20, I'm nearly half of the way to the world record, so I'll just go for the world record in the future at some point. So I, get away through failing the triple crossings, I end up collecting so many, but just keep at it. You know, I loved the English Channel. I have had a few negative experiences, but overall I love the channel. I love being out there, and now I love the waters around Dorset and all the incredible places that we go now. So
did you ever meet Alison Streeter?
Oh, sadly no. So she retired just before I started, and you may know that she's really kind of taken a distanced herself from the whole swimming world. And I emailed her once and she emailed me back, which was really, really kind of her. She didn't need to, you know, she wasn't my coach. We had no specific connection. But she's a very incredible woman, character, trailblazer, the first woman to do a triple crossing of the English Channel. I have so much respect for her. Would love to meet her. I got to know her mum quite well, Frida. I spent a lot of time in Dover, so I got to see Frida a lot.
Special woman, yeah. Frida. So special. Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
I did a lot of my training with Frida. So tell us about the Bahamas swim in 2014.
So
Still hold that record?
Yeah. I mean, people go after it, and sometimes they wear extra clothing or items. They can't really break their records. It seems to stand still. I was struggling because I was attempting triple crossings at English Channel, but not being successful at that third crossing for a few years. So that was 2011, 2012. I attempted those triple crossings, but never finished the third lap. So then 2013, well, going into 2013, I thought I just need to leave the English Channel. It became this kind of big, dark, heavy cloud hanging over me. I needed to change. And the cold swimming year in, year out, I was doing up to 20 hours training swims in the cold, and I just needed a break. So I decided that hypothermia was probably what was limiting me finishing the third crossing of these triple crossing attempts. I'd go somewhere warm, find different water temperatures, and hopefully have a better outcome. And 2013, I attempted Cuba to America. That was unsuccessful because of box jellyfish stings. And then I thought, where can I go that's still warm? Because I need warmth to get away from the cold, to do a long world record marathon swim. And then I had some connections via American swimmers that I'd met along the way. And they were like, oh, try it in the Bahamas. And I'm like, okay. So we started in the Bahamas, the team and I, and by the team. They were on the boats and kayaks and that. And I swam between two islands. Yeah, big swim. No one swam further in just bathers, goggles and cap.
I know that you've swum around Manhattan and I'm doing it in October. So
it's exciting.
Is it a lovely swim?
I think it is iconic. And the Hudson was my favourite bit because you can go really fast down there and you're heading straight to the finish line. So it's like getting in the fast lane and careering down. It's a special swim. I don't think it, for me, it has the same allure as the English Channel. I did it once, was happy with it. I've got a really exciting swim happening, the entrance to Sydney Harbour, which no one, it seems, has officially ever run events across the entrance to the harbour, and it's stunning water there. But in Australia, I don't have a big boat like I have here. So my capacity to organise very long swims, like ultramarathon swims, would be very limited, be very logistically challenging. Whereas now I have this big escort boat here. I mean, it's 54 feet long. It can take up to 15 people on trips for 24 hours and over. So here I have the capacity to do really exciting big swims.
I'm joined by Roy Beale. So tell me about your role with Chloe.
I am her new head skipper, and I do a lot of the tidal planning, navigation planning, and engine maintenance on the boat.
And you're working, you're delivering swims in Dorset?
That's correct, yeah. Along the Jurassic Coast and around the Isle of Wight as well.
Oh. So how did you meet Chloe?
She was after a safety kayaker for an event she was doing last year, and I was recommended to her, and we've been together ever since, really.
So what's your background then?
I do a lot of sea kayaking, and I've done a lot of safety events for various swims. There's the British Long Distance Swimmers Association, Torbay one, for instance, and the Isles of Scilly, things like that, so I've done safety for those. And I'm an endurance sea kayaker as well, so I've done a few long-distance trips as well. So I know the sea quite well.
What do you enjoy about skippering?
For me, any excuse to be on the water. I'm not a swimmer. I prefer to be on it rather than in it. My favourite joke is saying that I'm a sea kayaker, so if I'm swimming, the kayaking's gone wrong. But also, I love the planning side of things and logistics and trying to get the tides right so the swimmers have the easiest swim they can have.
That's definitely what the swimmers want. So I think you've got a charity, the Clean Jurassic Coast Charity. Can you tell us a bit about that?
It's actually a community interest company, and that started off the back of my sea kayaking. And I was pulling up onto beaches and I noticed an increasing amount of plastic seemed to be washing up on the shores. And the Jurassic Coast, I look at it as my playground, and you know, I don't like messing my playground. And I formed Clean Jurassic Coast, partly for that, but also I thought there were a lot of beach cleaners that perhaps were cleaning on their own and maybe wanted some friends to help. So I started networking, and Clean Jurassic Coast was born, and it's just been growing ever since.
So just for people who don't know, what is the Jurassic Coast, and where does it start and end?
Yeah, it starts between Exmouth and East Devon at Orcombe Point and Old Harry Rocks in Dorset near Studland. It's about 95 miles of coastline, and it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and it's had that status since 2002.
And why is it special to you?
Apart from the phenomenal scenery, it's known as being the only place on the planet where you can see the Jurassic, Cretaceous and Triassic eras all in one area.
So what does the charity actually deliver?
We organise public beach cleans. That's probably one of our main things. We also have a small boat where we'll go along to the hard-to-reach places along the coast and, you know, sort of pull all the plastics away from the coast there. And this year, through a partnership with Portland Marina and Chloe's Channel Queen business, we are going to be using Channel Queen as a classroom, and we're going to start educating children, school groups, and talk about the Jurassic Coast, the environment, the importance of the marine world, and the impact of plastic.
Okay, well, I think we should go for a swim now. What do you reckon?
I don't know. I think I've been putting it off all morning. In fact, I've been putting it off all 3 weeks I've been here.
Oh, well, let's go swim.
Okay.
So we're in the van now, and we were hoping for a little swim on at Weymouth, but the tide's too far out. So where are we going to go, Roy?
We're going to go to Bowley's Cove over the other side of the bay.
Oh, are you looking forward to the swim, Chloe?
No.
It's too cold.
It's going to be about 8 degrees.
We have arrived at Bowley's Cove.
Yay, you're going for a swim?
Yeah, go for a swim.
So we're on the beach now. It's quite windy and quite cold. We're going to have a very short dip and experience the Dorset water.
Yes.
Special Dorset water.
Very special.
And we can see Portland Bill just about, but it's quite rainy and
misty.
We can't see very much at all. But we can see Portland looming up and a rather large tanker as well.
Yes, very large tanker.
So here we go, we're going in. Like it or not.
8 degrees, not my favourite temperature.
Here we go. Oh, it's warm.
It's cold.
It's warm.
Oh my god!
We're officially in the water.
Ice blocks.
We're up to our knees.
I dare you to swim back to Portland, Vicky.
I'm not taking you up on that dare. Yay! Wave!
Oh, it's so cold!
So we've had our very windy dip and a little splash in the sea, and it was really lovely. Now, I've heard that you like ice cream.
I do like ice cream. Who doesn't like ice cream?
I love agree. Who doesn't? Mm. Absolutely love ice cream. But ice cream plays a part in your Channel crossings.
Mm.
Tell me why.
Well, I was getting quite bad hypothermia when I was attempting multiple laps of the English Channel non-stop, and I realised I just needed to eat more ice cream and more pizza and put on some weight, and that was one of my tactics for my successful triple crossing.
Fantastic. Maybe we should go and find ice cream now.
Well, it is a bit chilly, if you insist, Vicky,
you
we
could
will do that.
Always eat ice cream.
Calories are important after a cold swim.
Yes.
Okay, off we go.
Off we go. We're back on the boat now. So, Chloe, tell me a bit more about your kind of organising and coaching role.
I grew this passion and obsession I had for the English Channel, and I couldn't understand why more people weren't swimming the English Channel. So back in 2009, when I started swimming the English Channel, it wasn't that popular a thing in Australia. Maybe a few swimmers from Australia would do it a year. And I'd never seen an English Channel relay in the first few years of my English Channel swimming that had come from Australia, like an Australian-only one. And so I really spearheaded getting groups of English Channel swimmers from Australia year in, year out, and trying to get as many relay teams together as I could, and then as well supplement that with solos as well. So I started training people in 2013. Mainly they were based in Australia. I was based in Melbourne at that point, so a lot were anywhere from Victoria or Melbourne based, but they were travelling also from other states around Australia for all the swim camps and swim events I would run in Australia. And then we would come over to England, and then any others around the world that were also booked in, and we were doing distance coaching, for example, they would come and meet us, and we'd rendezvous in England for each of the tides. It got really busy. There was one year where I had 56 swimmers on the programme. There was two Australian school-aged relays from Geelong Grammar, which is a very prominent school in Australia. In fact, King Charles went there when he was a teenager. So that was amazing. And then I had two relays from America that same year. I worked with Dan Simonelli, a very respected swim coach and marathon swimmer. So I got really busy. So I've run about 20 open water, cold water specific swim camps since
2014. So I've been doing that for 11 years now. I've run them in Melbourne, Sydney, in Dorset. So I've avoided Dover.
So do you enjoy it? What do you get out of it?
Yes, I love working with swimmers so much because you can see them go through their journey of training and their dream of achieving something, whether it's relay or solo or something else. And then as long as you're coaching or on the boat crewing for them, you can be part of that process of them, like literally stroke for stroke as they work towards achieving that goal, then the euphoria of them finishing. And it's really special. And I think one of the extra special things for me is that I have seen over the years that people's confidence often grow on programs like this because they really stretch themselves, most swimmers, to get into that relay and finish their relay swimming or their solo swimming. And then that confidence often transfers to other areas of their life. They've got more confidence to speak up for themselves in relationships or more confidence in the workplace and more self-confidence generally. And I really love that people often feel really empowered when they come out of the a program that I'm offering or event that I'm offering that's on the bigger side. So people, it's more of a journey. I like to think that I go through a journey with swimmers and most of them become in a way part of my family. So I have this lovely extended family spread out across the world. So when I'm traveling, it's great. I just ring up one of my family and I'm coming. There's always somewhere to stay.
Can you tell us about the swims that are coming up this summer?
Oh my God, I'm so excited. There's quite a few. So from memory, we've got quite a few groups doing Hurst Castle to the Needles, which is 6 kilometres. There's 3 relays going around the Isle of Wight, full circumnavigation, that's 90 kilometres.
Old Harry to Swanage.
We've got a solo swimmer, and then we've got a duo doing that. Yeah. We're running a camp in Dorset. It's 3 full days, and that runs twice in June. And in that, there's a lot of swimming next to this big channel boat included because it's such a unique thing we can offer, which really you can't get at other camps. So there's daytime swimming, nighttime swimming next to this boat. And we're doing a swim from Swanage to Old Harry on one camp and then Old Harry to Swanage with this. So rotating, so practicing those relay rotations, which is a new thing for a lot of people getting ready for channel relays. So it's really about prepping for the English Channel, that camp. And there's a few others that are going to be released soon.
Yes.
In the pipeline.
And you've got some Girls Alive relays. What are they?
So there's this lovely lady, Esther, who is a key member of Girls Alive. So it's a non-for-profit organisation and they love encouraging women to get outdoors and exercise all sorts of sports, not just swimming. But swimming is one of their key sports.
And when you do one of these swims, where do you stay? Do you have to camp?
So we meet the swimmers at a marina, whatever is closest to the swim start. We pick them up at the marina any time, of the day or night, and that is required for that particular swim. And then afterwards, usually they'll jump off the boat. They don't have to swim to shore, but I mean they will go home.
Are there swim camps you can come on where you stay on the boat?
So there's also an adventure weekend along the Dorset coast, and some of those swimmers are choosing to stay on board over the weekend. It's just a 3-day thing. And then some are staying on land and we're meeting in Poole Harbour each day to pick them up. So that is something else. The boat is going through continual upgrade each season. So in the future, maybe there'll be more kind of liveaboard experiences. But at the moment, it's generally more during the day or 24-hour swims.
And have you got any other big plans you can share with us? Is there a swim coming up in France?
Nope.
You're going to France. We're going to
France. Oh, it's a big swim. Okay, in my mind, big swim is like a double crossing in the channel at least. Okay. So this is a fun swim. It's, I believe it's 33 kilometres. It's down a river in France in the... It's in the Cognac area. Yeah. I'm very excited about the swim because it's the same distance as the English Channel, so it's great prep for swimmers based in France or in easy access to France to go along and train up and practice the same distance and practice feeding during a long swim, which is really good skills. And it'll be a little bit cool as well, so water temperature's great. But they're going down a river, so it's not going to take as long as an English Channel swim. And there's even locks, so the kayakers have to get out and get back in a few times, which I think is hilarious.
So you're looking forward to a wonderful summer of swimming in Dorset?
Yes.
Why do you love it down here?
Well, for me, there's nothing like it in Australia. Like, I love Australian beaches and I love the waters in Australia. I'm not trying to compare England to Australia, but what you have in this area is so unique. There is no equivalent in Australia to, well, A, the English Channel. But besides that, there's nothing like the Dirtle Door. There is nothing. There's no white chalky cliffs.
It's relatively unspoilt, isn't it, along most of the coastline here? Obviously, you have the big seaside towns, but the areas in between, they're just spectacular.
I find Harry's Rocks very magical, actually.
Yeah, stunning.
Oh, I forgot to mention that before. That's definitely also on my lots of love swim.
Yeah, it's good. We love old Harry.
Well, good luck. I hope you have an absolutely fantastic summer.
Thank you.
And how can people find out about booking in?
Well, I have a website, which is my name, so chloemcardle.com, and you'll see a whole list of swim events happening over the summer here, or people can follow me on Instagram, which is my name again, or Facebook. Again, if you just chuck my name in social media, Googles, see what we're up to, and Roy, you're in socials, aren't you?
Yeah, well, you can follow Roy's Outdoor Life, and I will also be advertising Chloe's Swims, and you'll see access to them from there.
And we're having a special fundraising day for Roy's charity Clean Jurassic Coast. It's going to be October 7th. And we do a dip at the Needles, so you can thread the needles.
You can thread the needles.
We go out with Channel Queens, or everyone has a chance to be on the boat. We have lunch on the boat as well together. Thread the needles. We've got kayakers and rib drivers in the water, as well as the Channel Queen large boat.
Yep, plenty of safety. And there's some very fast tides. And watching people swim through the rocks at probably about 8 kilometres an hour is just brilliant to watch.
We ran it last year and it was really successful, so we can't wait to run again this year.
There's a debate about how much of swimming the channel is mental, and Alison Streeter reckons it's 90% mental. What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's such a contentious question in open water swimming for distance events, and I think that instead of looking at either or what percentage of one, because it would take away from the other, I think both in parallel are really important, because you need to have the physical endurance foundation to swim the English Channel. For example, you need to have basic technique for swimming. You need to have basic endurance. You need to have some pace. I know a lot of swimmers think of themselves as slow swimmers, not fast swimmers, but you need to have some pace and do some sort of interval training to get some speed up. But then on the other side of that, if you can't mentally stay in the water for 6 hours to complete your 6-hour swim, you can be the fittest, fastest, strongest swimmer in the world, but if you don't have that mental capacity, then you will not survive. There are Olympic swimmers who have failed English Channel swims, not because it was too cold or because the day was too bad, it's just that they couldn't handle it. And a few over the years that have been going for speed records, they pull out because they know they're not on target for a speed record. And I think really those people that pull out, the super speedy ones that are going for time records and know they're off and they pull out, I think those people, it's a real shame that they kind of miss the point of marathon swimming. I really think the point is to go out there and discover and push your boundaries and try something new or try something different and achieve something great in and of itself. I don't see the English Channel as a race. I see marathon swimming as something of a discovery, internal and external. And I think it's such a shame. I mean, it's only a rare occasion, but I just think it is a shame when I see that it happens, you know, once every 3, 4, 5 years, because that's just really, I don't think it's the essence of our sport.
This is Upway. This train is for London Waterloo. The next station is Dorchester South.
I'm back on the train now, heading for London. What a fabulous day. Chloe was a fun and regal companion. And I definitely want to do some of those swims. Not sure I can decide which. Harry's Rock, Dirtle Door, or Threading the Needles. Too much choice. Thanks for listening. See you next time.